Because of these results, it would seem to confirm Kelly's hypothesis that cancer cells do not have the ability to resist the protease enzyme as much of the normal human body cells have, or in other words, the cancer doesn't have quite the same resistance that we have, although if we take an overdose of these, we can digest ourselves as well. We can tell that quite easily by taking an overdose of bromelain from eating the core of raw pineapple. Very shortly, on doing that, you begin to feel that your tongue is being digested quite effectively. The other endocrine supports that's absolutely necessary in the treating of cancer comes from iodine. And what is interesting here is to realize that both African studies and elsewhere have indicated that people excrete more iodine in their urine in cold weather than they do in hot weather. Which means that anyone with cancer in the wintertime, because they are excreting more iodine, really need to increase their iodine sources. Now, although kelp is very high in iodine, it's extremely high in sodium. And we already had mentioned that sodium was an enzyme inhibitor, and that's why people should be on low sodium when they have this terrible disease. Now, experiments on cancer cultures have demonstrated that smaller iodine doses make the cancer cells grow more rapidly, where larger doses is used at the beginning of our treatment for cancer is favorable in inhibiting excessive growth. So we watch the basal metabolism in terms of a thermometer for hypothyroidism diagnosis, and that will be in a different tape. Some of the non-high sodium containing products that contain a high level of iodine are spinach, if particularly the soil was fertilized with potassium iodide, then it goes way up and is one of our highest sources, but otherwise it's still fairly good. And the other ones are haddock and halibut. They are rather high in iodine, and they are quite good. What we normally would do for cancer cases, or quite often, we'll put them on half-strength Lugol's iodine, and we give them a certain number of drops. As we noted, another source of iodine is Lugol's solution, L-U-G-O-L. It must always be half-strength, and it's given particularly through the first weeks in larger doses. 3 drops 6 times a day has proved to be favorable in treating cancer of this way. Lugol's solution contains 5% iodine, 10% potassium iodide in water, so you are in fact getting your potassium as well. But it must always be half strength. Now, it's particularly effective for the inflammatory types of cancer, such as we see in cancer of the breast cases, where the breast looks like it's just one big boil and it's quite inflamed. So it actually works well in these cases, and it's nice to know that. I'm going to flip back to the phytonutrients now, since there's a very important one here that we hadn't mentioned above in the tape, and that is calcium. Calcium is absolutely an excellent thing. It's frequently found in terms of blood levels, may be found variable in cancer cases, but it's involved in dozens, if not hundreds, of different cellular and extracellular processes that are regulated by the changes of the extracellular calcium ions. And I'm going to quote Albert Lehniger. That's L-E-H-N-I-G-E-R, Lehniger, professor of medical science at Johns Hopkins University. And what he states is this. He says, as we have seen, calcium is central to the ordered progression of replicating cells through their growth division cycle. What's he saying? He's simply saying calcium is necessary for growth, all right, and for the replication of cells so they can duplicate themselves. But he also continues and says, neoplastic epithelia and mesenchymally derived cells can initiate DNA synthesis and proliferate normally in a low calcium medium, which does not support the proliferation of their normal counterparts. Now, putting that in ordinary English, what it's saying is this, that cancer cells can repeat and produce by initiating DNA synthesis. In other words, they can replicate themselves and proliferate normally in a low calcium medium. That's all that is saying. And in addition, it says this low calcium medium that allows the cancer cells to turn over rapidly and effectively, that same low calcium medium that permits that does not support the proliferation of normal tissue reproduction. In other words, calcium is specifically required to block the initiation of DNA synthesis without stopping ongoing normal DNA synthesis, unquote. If you recall, we said that it was important for cancer that we have good oxygenation, because cancer does not like oxygen, it thrives in an anaerobic metabolism, which is one that is very high in sodium and lower in potassium, since potassium is favorable to a good oxygen level. Well, so too is calcium. So much so that calcium can bind to 7 oxygen locations on a protein while still holding onto a water molecule. What am I saying there? Well, it really boils down to the fact that calcium binds to important compounds, ligands, 10,000 times as fast and 10,000 times as strong as, say, magnesium does, for example. Now, since all of these abilities give calcium the most chemical flexibility to carry out a whole group of biological factors required to sustain life, calcium could rightly claim the title of king of bioelements. What I just gave you in terms of the calcium was taken from the book called The Calcium Factor, A Scientific Secret of Health and Youth, by a friend of mine by the name of Robert Barefoot. I must write him someday and tell him that I do not agree in the position that cancer cases should be drinking cow's milk or eating cow's cheese. The writer has been involved in raising stock for years, and one of the things that he's familiar with is the fact that when a calf is born at 90 pounds and it's drinking mother's milk, there is a special hormone in that milk called IGF-1. The IGF-1 stands for insulin-like growth factor number 1. It's really a misnomer because it's not much like insulin, but that's the name they gave it. But the interesting thing here is that when that calf is drinking that milk, this hormone is telling every cell in that calf's body, grow like mad, I want to have your body 1,000 pounds in approximately 10 months. Now, isn't it interesting that of all the tens of thousands of mammals out there, the cow, with its IGF-1, is producing IGF-1 that's identical to the IGF-1 that is produced in a human being. Now, this IGF-1 is made of 70 amino acids, and not only are they all present, but they're in the identical order, so that it appears that if the evolutionists wanted to say that we were more like apes, they should have said in that respect we were more like cows. However, that's another story, and which I don't believe. In any event, the IGF-1 peaks in the human being at about age 17, after which it drops to about 50% of its particular level. And it stays down there unless the individual later on develops cancer, at which time we find it is elevated in most cases, or certainly in cases of cancer of the breast, leukemia, cancer of the prostate, the stomach, the bowel. And it's in those cases that I've said, it's definitely elevated to about 300% higher than it should have been normally. We incidentally find it elevated in children as well when they have leukemia. So I have great reserves on this. And what's particularly bad is the fact that it takes 22 pounds on average to make a pound of cheese. Therefore, the cheeseaholic, beware, because you are really taking in an awful lot of this growth factor. And this growth factor is indiscriminate. It tells every cell in your body to grow like mad. And I don't want to have cancer cells in my body getting a message, grow like mad, I would like to have you 1,000 pounds in 10 months. That's not the kind of message I want to be giving my cancer cells. Now, it's interesting that pasteurizing hardly affects this IGF-1 at all. So for this reason, IGF-1 is not something that the human being should be engulfing when they have cancer. Now, also interesting is the fact that the IGF-1 is entirely different in goats than it is in cows, and therefore some goat's milk is permitted and some goat cheese is permitted in cancer cases, but definitely not cow dairy product for my patients, I know that having said this, I would hear from the dairy councils and not be very welcome. But I don't know how you can get around this data, excepting to say that there are some studies pointing out that cancer of the breast is less in milk drinkers than in non-milk drinkers. And I have to admit that. And there are some other studies concerning some other cancers. I just don't know how to justify them both. And when I see how the calves grow, I just kind of raise an eyebrow. I would say maybe that's milk, but those studies did not include cheese, and it may be that there is a difference once you have concentrated the IGF-1 in cheese, that is much worse, say, in our pizza and so on, than is the milk. But to be fair, we have to mention that milk drinkers do have lower incidence of cancer in some cases, but I'm a little leery of it because of the IGF-1 factor. For this reason, I take my cancer cases off of cow dairy products, but particularly emphasize the importance of not being a cheeseaholic as I was. We had mentioned the importance of plant sterols, such as in Moducare Sterinol. And at this point, you might be wondering, what on earth are sterols? Well, sterols comes from a Greek word stereos, which means solid, plus O-L, which means oil, sort of like a solid oil. They have a lipid or fat-like solubility, and we get things like ergosterol, which is a vitamin D precursor, such as is found in sunflower seeds. So where these plant sterols were used and given, patients with ovarian carcinoma, astrocytoma grade 4, which is a very highly malignant brain tumor, lymphoma, a massive pelvic myxosarcoma, and colon adenocarcinoma, which is the common colon cancer, with brain metastases, all had unprecedented responses. I might notice that plant sterols are also in another product called Oncolin, which is a product containing numerous plant sources and produced by a wonderful gentleman who I really account as a friend of mine, Dr. DeJiang, and who lives in New York. Now, going back to the paper that we mentioned about earlier at the beginning of the tape, the paper concludes, and this is the paper, of course, that was dealing with the fact that people who had reversed their cancers had made major dietary changes prior. But this is where the paper concludes. Quote, dietary supplements do not inhibit tumor destruction by radiation and chemo. And yet, this is a factor that is we're always told at cancer clinics, stop taking your supplements because it'll inhibit the ability to destroy tumors by the radiation and chemo you're on. Second thing was that dietary supplements actually enhance tumor cell destruction. And I've seen that personally in dozens of cancer cases myself. Three, supplements protect normal cells from radiation and the damage caused by chemo. Four, supplements induce reductions in the tumor mass. In other words, it's saying it shrinks the tumor mass, and particularly in those tumors that are resistant to all other treatments. Five, supplements improve the quality of life by reducing treatment toxicity and reducing the side effects from radiation and chemo. And as we said before, all of this from the Cancer Care Number 2 by the Center for Mind-Body Medicine and National Cancer Institute. Okay? So who says that diet and supplements don't matter? A patient told me that their oncologist this year stated that supplements should not be taken. Now, in Nutrition and Cancer, 1999, a Dr. Gonzalez of New York, who was treating advanced cancer cases with diet and detoxification, and we do have tapes on that as well, that are also referenced, so that you know whereof you are speaking, published his phase one results. And the National Institutes of Health were impressed enough by the results that Dr. Gonzalez had in treating advanced cancer with the diet and the above-mentioned detoxification that they put $1.4 million into a more extensive trial at Columbia University. Now, in spite of this, if you don't think that bias is bad, a vicious front-page attack of Gonzalez appeared in the Washington Post January the 18th in the year 2000. So rather than joy or be elated that some had good quality life restored to them, they spent their time calling this gentleman a quack, who incidentally treats cancer the way I do, and so that would put us into the quack classification, I suppose. I might note here, however, that if you're called a quack in India, they literally bow down to you because that is one of the highest accolades you can get. It means you are a real aerial type. You can do things on land, on water, and in the air that other doctors can't do. Well, cancer. We've been talking about it, and we didn't give you the source for the word. It's from the Latin, which means crab, from the tendency to draw in or shrink on maturing. And this is why when a doctor is examining a woman's breast, he may put the light over to the side, because if there's a little drawing or shrinking as the cancer matures, it tends to pull tissue in, and so we can see a faint evidence of a dimple on the breast surface. And when we see that, we say, oh, and we suggest that a mammogram, or we make sure that we don't feel a tumor there. So what cancer is, of course, is an overgrowth of cells which invade and metastasize to form tumors. What does metastasize mean? It simply means the spread of the disease from an original site to a second site which is not connected to the first one. In other words, it could be a far off. From meta, meaning over or after, and stasis, to stand. So it means that this particular cancer is standing over there somewhere as compared to the original one. Now, there's two broad types of cancer. One is called carcinoma, which is the epithelial, such as linings of organs, and that's both inside and outside, and that equals approximately 90% of the cancers out there. The second broad type is sarcoma, which literally means in the Greek flesh, body, and it looks like embryonic or early tissue, and that represents about 5% of the cancers out there. Now we've got approximately 95% of the cancers. What about the other 5%? Well, it's after saying two broad types, it's the third type, and it's the other 5%, which are the lymphomas and leukemias, etc. Now, it's rather interesting when we note now that 90% of cancers are epithelial, that they're the linings of organs, both inside and outside, that in a research journal called the Postgraduate Journal, that we discovered that it contained exam questions for postgraduate studies. And one of the questions is a multiple choice question dealing directly with chemotherapy. And remember, 90% of the cancers were epithelial. And the correct answer to a particular question, which was, chemotherapies are relatively blank in epithelial tumors. And the blank was effective, moderately effective, minimally effective, not effective. And the correct answer is chemotherapies are relatively ineffective in epithelial tumors. You'll find that in the North American Medical Journal of January 1990, and also in its previous issues. Now, when you stop to think that what they're saying is 90% of cancers are not affected by chemotherapy, does that not strike you strange that that is one of the commonest treatments for this kind of cancer? It remains one of the most common. And the reason is that, unfortunately, drug companies make a lot of money from chemo. And the more of it is being used, the better. But when they say that's relatively ineffective, then that it should give you a warning signal for those of you who are contemplating taking chemotherapy. It has been found by Gerson and myself over the years that people who have had extensive chemo really do not get good results in reversing their cancers by any other methods. Now, the exception to this is you would never, there's a particular rare type of cancer of the breast, and it does respond beautifully to chemo, and it'll give 90% cure rate. Same thing applies for cancer of the testicle. We do not play with things that are very effective. You know, it's rather interesting. I remember Churchill once said that throughout life, certain people will stumble over the truth. But most of them get up, shake themselves off, and carry on and in the pathway they were originally going in. I happen to be one of those that enjoys seeing the results at the bedside. I don't care about the theory if I'm getting the results at the bedside. Now, if you look at immunity in general, it comes from the Latin immunus, which means free from service or taxes. Boy, oh boy, wouldn't I like to have that kind of immunity. Anyway, if you look at a lifeline going from when a person's born to the time they die, and you put on that lifeline, you put their immune status as measured, you would discover that from age zero, when they're born, to about age five, that the immune level was slowly increasing. Their immunity was increasing. It would stay roughly at a level till about 45, and then it would start to drop off again. Now, this is unfortunately what happens because of the diets of people in our circumstances and in our country. If, however, you were to take on that same graph and draw the curve of cancer incidence, you would notice it was very high in young people up to about age five. The cancer incidence would then drop. It would stay roughly down until you started to get around 45 years of age and so, and then it would start to swoop up. And then when you looked at them, you would say, hey, wait a minute. As my immunity goes up, cancer goes down. As my immunity goes down, cancer goes up. You would get a mirror curve looking at you. So, very important to keep that in mind, and it's as a representative of what's happening, so it's very vital that you improve your immunity. An example of why this is needed: if you have AIDS or other viral diseases which are progressive, cancer can emerge, just as this graph that we just described tells you. For example, AIDS cases, after they've had AIDS for a while, they may show Kaposi's sarcoma, or Burkitt's lymphoma, or myeloid leukemia, which are three unusual or free of the rarer forms of cancer, and you see them coming in these people because their immune systems have dropped. In other words, cancer was a sequel to a sick immune system. What are we trying to tell you? We're trying to tell you that you better ensure that your immune system is up all the time as a preventative. And you do that by cutting down on sugar, which freezes your white blood cells, by eating lots of raw vegetables and raw fruit, well chewed, the way children, way young people now are chewing their food is the same way as the so-called music out there. Boom, boom, bang. Boom, boom, bang. Chew, chew, gulp. Chew, chew, gulp doesn't do it. God made us with grinders and spray mechanism. And if you want to know how bad you're chewing, you just take a heaping tablespoon of dry Sunny Boy cereal, put it in your mouth, and start chewing it until it gets liquefied. And if that doesn't let you know how little you are chewing and how poor your habit is for chewing, then I don't know what will. Now, we'd already mentioned AIDS, which is a virus and certain ones, and I'm reminded of a cartoon that I show at people. Here's the doctor saying, don't worry, it's only a virus, and here's a man half on the floor and looking exactly like an ape, all black and discolored. Don't worry, it's only a virus. I would say to you, you really worry, it's just a virus, okay? Now, how can you build up your immune activity? Well, one of the ways you can build it up is to ensure that you have some of the following. And I'm going to run through a little short form diagram. One of the things that improves lymphocytes, which are white blood cells that fight chronic disease, is vitamin A. Now, because A is synergistic with zinc, I like an A plus zinc as a supplement. Vitamin A increases the numbers of lymphocytes. And what do lymphocytes do? they in turn provide, or pass through, I should say, pass through the thymus gland, which is under your breastbone. Okay? Now, that thymus is actually shrunk by a decreased vitamin A, decreased zinc, or decreased arginine, which is found highest in nuts. Also is shrunk by eating too much fat, such as is in potato chips and French fries and fried anything. Okay? Now, the lymphocytes that are increased from A plus zinc, and I might add vitamin E also, are passed through the thymus. Isn't it interesting that, however, they are cut off of this trip if you're busy eating narrow-spectrum foods and you have obtained a food sensitivity to milk from drinking it on a continuous basis, white flour products such as wheat, yeast, eggs, which of course are nowadays very unhealthy because of the fact that they're raised by chickens who are kept in cages who don't see the out of doors, and you cannot get a healthy egg, as they found out at the University of Saskatchewan, by having unhealthy chickens. I don't know why they had to spend $150,000 for that conclusion. Corn, and of course an abundance of sugar. All of these will help to prevent the lymphocytes passing through the thymus gland, which is very important for them, because some of these lymphocytes will end up being killer cells, and others, of course, will help produce some of our antibodies. Once they've passed through this thymus gland, which we say must not be shrunk by a decrease of A plus zinc or arginine as in nuts or increased fat intake, then we discover that some of them will become T cells. And those are just the ones I'm going to concentrate on the moment. Well, what inhibits that is this. Hot fats again, because one of the things necessary for you to obtain a T cell is an active form of B6 called pyridoxal 5-phosphate. That's an active form, since a lot of us are unable to change the inactive pyridoxine hydrochloride into the active form, particularly as we get older. You can get that B6 from thorn, and no one should take more than about 3 a day of those, because it can make your dreams very vivid. Those people who cannot remember their dreams or who only dream in black and white, don't recognize color, that's one of the indications that you're low on B6. And of course, another indication is that you have a greasy nasal fold. You get a lot of grease just around the flare of your nostrils there. Pesticides will stop the production of T cells. Stress steroids will also inhibit the action of A and zinc in producing T cells. Hot fats will just, as we mentioned before, will decimate the active B6. And some iron is needed also in the production of T cells, but you get enough of that in beans, peas, and lentils, provided your vitamin C levels are okay. Now, the T cells are necessary for immune activity. But here again, their immune activity can be cut down by sugar, as we've mentioned before, lead, cadmium, such as in cigarettes and tobacco smoke, and welding fumes, particularly if you're welding with galvanized pipes, by excess iron, excess copper, by steroids, and of course by chemo. It's interesting that chemo will actually decrease your immune activity. But it's boosted by your A plus zinc and your arginine. In case you're not aware, cancer is very, very big business, particularly in the United States. I said it's very big business because in the United States, a cancer death occurs every 75 seconds or thereabouts, right now, today, at about 50 per hour. Cancer develops when normal genes mutate or change to result in carcinoma. Well, what are the causes of these mutations that result in cancer? If you go to Pons and Varmus, University of California, who got a Nobel Prize for proving it in 1989, it is abuses from our environment. What kind of abuses? Some of the abuses that are described are excessive alcohol, radiation, including flying. And I did read one report where one chest x-ray had the same amount of radiation as flying 200 miles, although recently some people have been arguing that point, but they still have to admit that you get lots of chest x-rays, quotation marks, if you're flying nowadays. Tobacco was one of the other ones, because tobacco gives an awful lot of radiation. As a matter of fact, in one report, and I, for the life of me, don't understand why this hasn't been jumped on, but when you look at cancerous lungs, you will find at the bifurcations or at the Y intersection as the lungs go down, you will find little round areas that are so high in radiation it's unbelievable. We detect those by needle Geiger counters, and we just put the needle on and we come to the bifurcation and the needle goes right off the scale and you have to adjust your Geiger counter. Now, the reason it does that is very simple. You have the tars from the cigarettes, which are being swept up by little villi, and the villi don't go past the bifurcation, so the tar gets collected right where the two tubes bifurcate, which looks like the bottom of the Y in a slingshot, and that's where this tar collects. They discovered that that was the equivalent at some of those tests. That little wee daub of the collection had the same radiation as it would have if you had a chest x-ray every Monday, every Tuesday, every Wednesday, every Thursday, every Friday of every single week in the year. And that's by smoking approximately 12 cigarettes per day. Those things do not help us at all, and it's not surprising, therefore, that we have an awful lot of cancer of the lung in cigarette smokers. We've just had another one. It doesn't seem to matter when I give this talk. Within 10 days or so, I've already talked to one more victim of cigarettes who thought, well, it was never going to happen to them. Okay? When we come to toxins, we get some other interesting data. If you go to Food Chemical News, they tested 7,000 American people. Approximately 75% of the urine contained pesticide residues. Since we're speaking of toxins that affect the incidence of cancer. One of the other abuses, we've already mentioned excessive alcohol, radiation including flying, tobacco and the radiation associated with it, and another one of the abuses, the fourth one, drugs, where certain antihistamines have been noted to increase the incidence of cancer in lab animals. Now, when it comes to toxins, which are another factor involved in the abuses, under Food Chemical News, where 7,000 Americans were tested, it was found that 75% of them had urine that contained pesticide residues. It's for this reason that doctors treating the same as the speaker utilize a detox process in to eliminate pesticide residues and other toxic products. Now, without going into the detail of detoxing immediately, we will notice that one of the oldest treatments known for detoxing was fasting. It's been used by many cultures for many, many centuries. But we must emphasize non-rapid fasting for the severely overweight. And one of the reasons for that is that a lot of pesticides and insecticides and so on are fat-soluble and store in the fat tissue. And as long as they stay in the fat tissue where the blood vessels are very, very small, the person is doing okay. However, there are cases where overweight people on rapid fasting or extensive heavy fasting that were severely overweight have died in approximately 2 to 3 weeks from massive doses of insecticides and herbicides that were released when they lost their fat tissue from the fast. So fast slowly and intermittently if you're grossly overweight, okay? Now, one of the reasons for detoxing is to decrease the heavy metal load, since these heavy metals inhibit enzyme activity in the human body. Now, it's been found when you do detox these people that as the pesticides and other toxins are cleared, the T cells and the B cells, which are responsible for immune factors, all increase. And this is the major reason, or one of the major reasons, for detoxifying, since T cells include the natural killer cells for attacking cancer, and B cells are responsible for the antibodies. And so we want to increase both T and B cells, so this is why we insist on a detox program for a cancer case. For further information on detoxing and why it is done and how prevalent it is, with references, you're referred to the detox tape. In speaking of killer cells, Dr. Stoff has come up with a particular product called AG Immune. The beauty of this is it contains a factor called AEI10, and this factor is one that activates the T killer cells. It acts as a trigger because it's no use increasing your killer cells by taking A plus zinc, etc., and vitamin E if they're going to hang around on the street corner like bums rather than being out there working when the work is available for them in the immune system. Now, this is an excellent product and should be taken at about 5 a day to 6 a day for people who have serious cancers. It's interesting to note that there are no bad side effects to this, and although it is taken from organically grown cows who have been so on organic property or a certified organic property for over 40 years and in addition is a milk product, and you recall that I was worried about the IGF-1, the insulin-like growth factor number 1 for cases in this, what they have done is filtered the colostrum they have gotten from these cows. And since IGF-1 is a big molecule, they have removed that one, and it is perfectly safe for cancer users. It is interesting to note that when you look at the Food Marketing Institute reports of 1999, that when the products used to maintain health are listed, that over-the-counter drugs are still number one treatment for disease, and people are turning to that rather than to vitamins and minerals.